Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for December 23rd, 2011.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
There are at least 25,000 streets that the taxi drivers have to learn to navigate.
There was a decrease in brain activity in portions of the brain involved in attention, emotional modulation, and inhibition.
We actually taught them the eye movements and visual control patterns that experts use.
Even when participants think they've seen a face previously, their eye movements tell us a different story.
This week, how the eyes reveal what we've really seen, and why emulating the eye movements of experts makes medical students better surgeons, and what long-dead brains can tell us about mental illness. Also, how violent video games could be changing young men's brains. But first, Suzanne Bard reports that the brains of London taxi drivers are just a little larger than the average person's.
To become a licensed taxi driver in London, you have to memorize a map of over 25,000 streets and 20,000 landmarks. Not surprisingly, many of those who begin the training ultimately fail to qualify.
It's a very large city. It's not like cities in some parts of Canada or North America, which are often laid out in a very regular pattern. London's very chaotic. The streets are sort of unpredictable in terms of their layout. So it's a huge challenge to be able to commit that kind of information to memory.
That's University College London neuroscientist Eleanor Maguire. She and her colleague Catherine Woollett measured the size of the hippocampus, a brain region associated with memory, in would-be taxi drivers.
We started off with 79 trainees who are all going to try and qualify. What we ended up with was 50% of them did qualify and 50% of them didn't qualify. And so we ended up with three groups, those who qualified, those who trained but didn't qualify, and a control group who didn't engage in any training at all, but were still studied at the start and the end of the project as a sort of baseline comparison.
What they found was striking. The brains of those who passed the exam successfully actually grew in size significantly during the training.
Interestingly, those who failed to qualify, they showed no brain differences between the start and the end of the study, in the same way that the control participants, also their brains didn't change. So the changes in the brain were only in those who qualified, and very specifically in this structure called the hippocampus.
Maguire says the results add to growing evidence that the human brain can remain flexible even in adulthood, which could have implications for the rehabilitation of people who have suffered brain injuries. She adds that London cabbies pride themselves on their knowledge and says it's unlikely they'll be allowed to resort to using GPS systems anytime soon.
Thanks, Suzanne. Earlier this year, the Supreme Court ruled that violent video games couldn't be banned by law, despite the fact that many studies have linked violent video games to aggressive and antisocial behavior. Now, Indiana University scientists have spotted brain changes that may be involved. Radiologist Vincent Matthews and his colleagues found that young men's brains functioned differently after a week of playing violent games.
There was a decrease in brain activity in portions of the brain involved in attention, emotional modulation, and inhibition.
Other studies have looked at brain images during or immediately after gameplay, but this one was done the day after the volunteers' last game. What's more, even after a week off the games, the volunteers' brain function hadn't fully returned to normal. Matthews also notes that his subjects weren't big gamers in real life, so the effects of playing the games regularly for years may be stronger or longer lasting. Next, the origins of mental illness are difficult to study, but researchers are now getting some help from preserved brains up to a century old. Correspondent Justin Warner has that story.
To understand mental illness, researchers are studying preserved brains that are up to a century old. Indiana University pathologist George Sandusky and his colleagues have extracted DNA from the brains, which came from deceased patients in an insane asylum.
At that period of time, they thought that a lot of mental illness was structurally or anatomically driven. In other words, when they did an autopsy, looked at a brain, they felt that they would find some structural changes, which, of course, they never did.
But the brain tissue tissue was kept preserved until this day, housed at the Indiana Medical History Museum. Sandusky says the museum also contains detailed written records describing each patient's symptoms. Now, after some trial and error, Sandusky's team has found a way to extract genetic material from the tissue. They're interested in genes linked to the illnesses the patients probably had.
So now what we're going to do, starting next April, is go back and we're going to look at four or five of these genes in these archival samples that we've gotten DNA from.
But why study last century's brain tissue when you can work with newer samples? Sandusky says one reason is that these patients lived under tightly controlled conditions, conditions that couldn't be replicated in a modern experiment.
By that I mean, one, they weren't allowed out of the facility. Two, they all ate the same diet. Three, they had a regimented program when they all went to bed at night and more or less got up at the same time.
What's more, they lived in a time when pollutants and other possible environmental triggers were very different from what we're exposed to today. Given all that, if the preserved samples have the same genes seen in today's patients with similar illnesses, that would strengthen the case that those genes actually caused the illness. And being certain of that could help modern doctors diagnose and treat mental illness more accurately and efficiently.
Thanks, Justin. Surgeons should train their eyes as well as their hands, according to researchers in Britain and Hong Kong. University of Exeter psychologist Samuel Vine applied his insights from sports research. He's taught athletes to imitate the eye movements of top players before turning to physical skills.
We actually taught them the eye movements and visual control patterns that experts use. And what this work has shown really is that actually that leads to an improvement in how quickly they learn these skills. But most importantly, it actually enables them to perform those skills under pressure and to maintain performance in sort of nerve-wracking or stressful circumstances.
In this study, medical students wore eye-tracking devices during simulated surgeries. They learned to mimic the eye movements of experienced surgeons, for instance, by focusing on the target tissue rather than the instruments. Sure enough, these students performed better under stress than those who studied hand movements or who were left to train themselves. Finally, Suzanne says our memories often fail us, even in high-stakes situations. But the eyes may provide a more accurate window into our memories. Suzanne has that story.
Juries often depend on the testimony of so-called eyewitnesses to identify suspects. But our memory for faces is notoriously inaccurate, which can sometimes lead to wrongful convictions. A new study suggests that eye movements may be a better indicator of what witnesses have actually seen.
Under some circumstances, eye movements might provide a more complete or perhaps a better indicator of what was encountered in the past than behavioral reports do.
Cognitive neuroscientist Debbie Hanula of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and her team showed volunteers pictures of faces. Later, they were shown some of these faces again, mixed in with new faces. As expected, the participants often incorrectly thought they'd seen some of the new faces before, but their eye movements revealed something different.
Even when participants think they've seen a face previously, their eye movements tell us a different story.
Hanula says the technique could also be used to better understand the memories of young children and psychiatric patients.
Young children can't necessarily verbalize or tell you what it is they've remembered, but eye movements can indicate what it is that they've seen in the past.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, we'll investigate why babies favor vigilante justice and what's behind collecting and hoarding. Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.